You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On April 4th of this year, Senator Frank Lautenberg introduced the Safe Chemicals Act of 2010, and in the House on July 22nd, Representatives Bobby Rush and Henry Waxman introduced the Toxic Chemical Safety Act of 2010. Both bills would amend the Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976, and we have asked Monona Russell, our resident chemist and industrial hygienist, to take a look at the proposed legislation and give us her assessment. Welcome back to our show.
Oh, thank you.
Why do we need an update to the Toxic Substances Control Act?
Well, considering that it was released in 1976 and hasn't been changed significantly since, that alone should have certainly caused a reassessment. And it also had huge flaws, really serious problems with it.
Well, what did it call for?
Well, it called for the testing of chemicals, and that sounded all very good, but it gave them almost no authority over the 63,000 chemicals that were already in existence in 1976.
They were grandfathered in?
Yes. So unless there was some really strong reason to test those, they just kind of slid under the radar.
Are we talking about things like asbestos? Was asbestos grandfathered in?
Well, asbestos had a unique standard because people did know fairly early that it was a problem, but they couldn't stop its use because for a long time they said that was the only thing that would be as fire retardant as asbestos is.
So the laws called for the EPA to show that a chemical is dangerous, and they had to test it. That means that thousands of chemicals could be released into the marketplace, and unless the EPA or somebody suspected that there was a problem, it just was automatically okay?
Right, with no testing. We keep thinking
And the chemical company that was producing it didn't have to test it?
No, not at all. Not at all. The majority of the chemicals that you're exposed to, even at home, have never been tested for especially chronic toxicity, sometimes not even acute.
Isn't this Senator Lautenberg's third attempt to get a bill of this kind passed?
Yes. The earlier bills were called the KidSafe Chemicals Act because it really aimed to look at the most vulnerable populations, which we should do when we're planning to save the planet. We should be looking at children, pregnant women, and the fetus, people with diseases of various types.
So is this new proposal, the Safe Chemicals Act, really just a version of the Kids Safe Chemicals Act?
Yes, that's really very, very little change.
And what happened to the earlier proposals?
Both of them died in committees.
They really? Just, when and the what committees, was the justification?
Oh, nobody had the impetus to really try to do anything.
Now, what's happened in these years since 1976? Has the EPA been able to ban many chemicals?
Well, no. They haven't. Even asbestos, which they did finally have all the data on and knew that they wanted to ban, they banned it. But the courts in a few years overturned it. The asbestos industry took them to court, and the court standard for proving an unreasonable risk is very different. And, of course, if EPA can't even ban asbestos, gosh knows they can't ban all the other chemicals that they consider
toxic. So how many chemicals have been banned as a result of—
Or even regulated. It isn't even a ban. Sometimes it's just that they have put restrictions on them. Of the 20-some thousand chemicals created since 1976, EPA asked to have 185 of them tested, and actually testing was only done on 169. And that's of a total of 82 or 3,000 chemicals that are under TSCA.
So how do these new bills differ from the 1976 law?
Well,
TSCA, which sounds TSCA. Almost opera.
It sounds like, yeah, an opera. We're going to change the opera. Yeah, there's some substantial changes. The most important is that the fundamental premise of the bill is different. In the old bills, the assumption is that chemicals are innocent until proven guilty. And the assumption is now turned around. Chemicals are suspect. You cannot assume a chemical is non-toxic simply because there is no data. And The other thing that they have really changed is that proving that the chemical is safe has to be done at the expense and by the manufacturer. Duh. You know, well, our taxes should not be the ones that are involved in testing of chemicals.
How does this compare to the European Union's REACH, registration, evaluation, authorization, and restriction of chemicals policy?
Well, you've hit on the key to why there's action now. Because if we don't do this, and if we don't update our regulations, we're going to lose the European market, which is 450 million people. And the markets in a number of other countries that are not European Union countries but have signed on to their protocols, because they are now requiring testing of some 30,000 chemicals.
Couldn't we just apply REACH to our own industry, or at least the things that we export?
Oh, from your lips to God's ears. That would be lovely, because it really is the way it has to go. But we are a capitalist country, and we aren't going to be doing things that way, I can assure you. So we're going to have to find a way in which we can keep industry happy and at least provide better protection for people.
My guest is Manona Russell, who's the founder and president of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety, and she visits us on a regular basis to talk about the dangerous things in our environment and how to spot them and what we can do about them or what we can't do about them in many cases. I'm assuming that the chemical industry lobby and some other lobbies are fighting these laws tooth and nail, but I always wonder why they would do that. For example, asbestos had to have cost the makers of asbestos a lot of money through court cases, through all sorts of penalties over the years, people who had developed lung diseases and the like. And isn't it in their best interest to just produce the safest product possible?
You'd think so. But it's very, very cheap to just dig in the ground and get asbestos. If you're going to use the asbestos substitute, you have to spin it and create it and invent it. It becomes expensive. The asbestos substitutes cost much more to produce than and let's face it, Canada is still making huge money on exporting asbestos, and we also export some.
Are both of the bills, the one in the House and the one in the Senate, pretty much the same?
Yeah, but there's some unique differences, and it took me a long time to really figure out what the major difference is, because they have the same provisions, basically.
But because they both want to be in compliance with REACH.
They both have the REACH outlook, and they both want to actually have EPA have the power to require testing and to have industry pay for it. And they have a list of the various tests that need to be done and so on and so forth. So they have the same intent. But the difference is that the Lautenberg Senate bill just seems to tighten things better. It's as if they know that industry is going to try to wiggle out as much as they can, and they kind of close off the doors better. If you read, it's more fun to read the House bill because it's better organized and it's shorter. But it leaves too many holes, in my view.
If our listeners want to read about the bills, we have links on our webpage at wnyc.org. Would there be priorities in which certain chemicals would be tested first? Would chemicals like phthalates and formaldehyde, bisphenol A, that we think may be dangerous, be at the top of the list?
Well, in the House bill, they actually name some of those substances.
Well, that's good.
It sounds good, but I have a problem with that, because those are the chemicals today, and this bill's got to last a long time. I would rather leave those decisions to the EPA, and I know from the speeches that Lisa Jackson, from the head of EPA, has already given that those are her priorities. She already is concerned about those chemicals. So the idea of telling EPA, okay, there's this list that you have to start with, is not as much to my liking as just leaving it to EPA.
Does this give EPA more enforcement clout?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They set the tests that have to be done. and the other priorities.
And what about other kinds of things, like do they regulate animal testing? Do they give special attention to products used by children?
Yes, they even have a whole section on setting up a children's advocacy health program where they're going to be looking specifically at those issues. Because you see, the tests that we use are usually animal tests, and they're sort of geared toward healthy adult exposures. And that needs to change. We have to really be looking at the most vulnerable populations.
In a little while, we'll be taking listener calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. If you had been consulted in the writing of these bills, would you have included stuff that isn't there?
I might have. I think that I would have asked for some kind of consumer information that tells you when a chemical has not been tested, because that's where we're missing a piece. We look at the product and it only tells us what is known. If you right now had to label every product that contains an untested chemical in it, that would be every product, mm-hmm. every product. But still, that information somehow should be available as more and more companies start to go toward things that are tested, and then we could prove that they were safer.
Like the TSCA, do these bills only affect chemicals that are regulated by the EPA?
Yes. There are exemptions for all of the chemicals that come under other agencies.
So drugs, cosmetics, food additives, pesticides aren't covered because they're under the jurisdiction of other agencies?
That's right.
That's an awful lot.
I know. And that's why
we've talked about some of them as being really
right.
dangerous.
And that's why we need to, after we finish with this bill, we need to get on to some of these others too.
Maybe a unified law? Maybe some string theorists can come up with
put it all together under one umbrella? That'd be nice.
Because in the end, isn't it all about chemicals?
That's right.
Is this just because of the way the American system has developed this fractured system?
That's right. We've just let it slide for so many years that it isn't only the 83 or 82,000 chemicals under TSCA. It's the over 100,000 chemicals that are in commerce and the 5 million that have been registered.
Well, have any of those other agencies been doing a better job? Have they been given more clout?
No, not really. FDA has a little clout in certain small areas, but they're also very weak. All of the agencies over the last few administrations in particular have had their budgets cut for enforcement and for outreach and so on. And it's been pretty much, you know, a shoot 'em up Western as far as chemicals are concerned.
We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll be taking your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And a reminder that you can read the bills that we're discussing, because we have also a link to them on our webpage at WNYC.org. Stay with us. Strychnine by the Sonics. He likes a taste of straight strychnine.
Yeah.
Well, are we drinking and eating things that are as bad for us as strychnine, do you think?
Well, strychnine is kind of an acute problem. It's kind of nice because you can associate the chemical with the effects.
In other cases, it's harder to make the link?
Yeah. The real problem are the things that cause cancer, birth defects, reproductive, developmental, organ damage over time. Those are the things that we don't know about until it's too late.
And burden of proof becomes a big issue in court cases. It's also something that distinguishes these two bills?
Yes. In fact, I looked for something that would explain the difference between the two bills. And if you look at the House bill, it says the burden of proof, you know, to show that a chemical is toxic. It says the manufacturers and processors of a chemical substance or mixture shall bear the burden of proving the chemical substance or mixture meets the safety standard. And that's the end of it. It stops there. But if you look at the Senate's bill under burden of proof, it says it shall be the duty of A, the manufacturers and processors of a chemical substance to at all times bear the burden of proving the chemical substance meets the applicability standard, and two, the administrator, that's the EPA official who runs this, to determine whether the manufacturers and processors of a chemical substance have met the burden of proof.
Because one person's test is not the same as the next person's test.
If you leave that without comment, the manufacturer can say, well, I met the burden of proof. Our toxicologists say that it's just fine. And now you've got a hassle. So I like the fact that it's tightening up all of those little escape hatches in the bill.
Let's take a call from Mary from Maryland. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm calling just to make a comment with regards to the proposed law, and I think I'm in favor of the Senate bill after having read as well the specifics that it addresses. But I was involved in a TSCA discussion. An investigation was done on carbonless copy paper where one of the manufacturers had failed to register 7 toxic chemicals that they were using in the product. A Michael Walker was in charge of that investigation at the time, and he felt that 7 toxic chemicals do not a non-toxic product make, which this was 15 years ago. And, of course, we're finding out that that was absolutely true. But back then, people really didn't believe it. Mr. Walker told us that the fine that was initially intended to be imposed was $11.2 million, which was one of the largest that TSCA had ever, at that time, intended to fine the company. And it was lowered to $2.1 million because the company insisted during testimony under oath that there were no end-user health responses or health complaints. Unfortunately, at that time, there were numerous complaints. There were lawsuits. There were attorney letters that came from a national union, all these different documentations for that particular corporation, which I guess the lawyers or the people who testified just absolutely didn't know about or didn't bother to check. I was kind of appalled that TSCA, on their own behalf, didn't do a Google search, at which time they would have found out that NIOSH had reopened the investigation of carbonless copy paper and was taking in information on a daily basis about the chemicals and the toxicity and the health complaints. So that never happened. And since NIOSH is part of the federal government, I would think that somebody would have sense enough to at least look and see what else is out there on the product that you're looking at imposing a fine on. I would appreciate it if the Senate bill or if there would be action taken for the Senate bill when you were talking about tightening regulation, that there should be some type of a company, like a catch pot, where if you had to test a chemical or a combination of chemicals, that you would be required to have a random selection, perhaps made by EPA or made by, I don't know, somebody grabbing a name out of a hat, and having that testing done so that it would be completely random, so that manufacturers couldn't say that responses that happened were caused by something else.
Monona?
Yeah, I happen to have a whole file on carbonless paper and happen to agree with a lot of what you're saying. And the only thing about random testing is we already have so many priorities, things we really know have to be tested, that I'm probably for really trying to narrow down the fields of because this bill only lists 300 chemicals. That's what the list has to be composed of. And if when they finish testing one, then they got to put another chemical in there in order to keep the list at 300 that are undergoing. That's not a lot of chemicals when you've got over 100,000 possibilities. So I don't think there's really room for random testing when we have that many priorities.
Thank you so much for your call. We have a lot of comments coming in. By the way, one of the questions is, why only 300?
Yeah, I'd like an answer to that myself. I think that's about all they figure they can get. It really should be 30,000. Mm-hmm. It should be the high volume production chemicals, that the same kind of list that REACH has.
A listener wonders if you had any thoughts on the use of chemical dispersants in the BP oil spill. The government is saying today that most of the oil is gone, and they're saying that that fears about the dispersants' toxicity have turned out to not been borne out.
In your dreams. And EPA says that they tested 8 of the dispersants. Only one was more toxic than oil itself, and the rest of them are about as toxic as oil itself. Well, oil is pretty toxic, and now we have the dispersant in there as well. And when you add the two chemicals together, now you've got a huge volume of chemicals added to that gulf. It doesn't make sense what people are saying.
Gina from Manhattan asks, is asbestos in talc?
It depends on the mine. The Vanderbilt mines in upstate New York, absolutely. And they've closed.
Well, but we don't know whether the talcum powder that we're putting on ourselves or our babies is from the Vanderbilt mine.
Well, it's not. Those are industrial talcs. The talcs that are in cosmetics, there is a study, if you're really interested, of 6 common cosmetic talcs. And they did find a fiber or two in some of them, but it's so small. We get more standing on a street corner. Mother Nature liked to put asbestos in talc. There's just no question about that. But there's a talc deposit in Montana. There's one in France that are really just pure talc.
Karen from New Rochelle asks if there's any company out there that only uses chemicals that are known to be safe in their products.
How could they do that?
Well, they could. Some have been tested. No,
very few. You would be extremely limited. Some of the companies that claim that are using natural chemicals, but there is no reason to assume a natural chemical is any safer than a synthetic one. And we've gotten some really rude shocks from Mom Nature.
My guest is Manona Russell, who is the founder and president of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety. Her website, by the way, is www.artscrafttheatersafety.org. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Sandy from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to listen to you today, especially about a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I work in the paint/coatings industry, and I have a couple of comments for you. Number one, as we know, the REACH legislation over in Europe essentially says that a chemical is guilty until proven innocent, and it's up to the industry to show the government agencies how safe a chemical is or a material is. Our premise here in the United States is that the material chemical is innocent until proven guilty. How does this new bill reconcile that? Because we know that REACH is basically about to become the world standard. That's my first comment. My second comment is, how will TSCA fit in with the global harmonization standards that are coming our way, I believe in 2013?
Yeah, both of those are very important questions. Right in the intent and in the purpose of the law, you will see that that these laws both say that you can no longer assume a chemical is safe, that there has to be proof. So that REACH policy is essentially in the bills. So that's step number one. As far as global harmonization, that is the real hope of our future, because OSHA has already proposed to accept the globally harmonized format for material safety data sheets. If that happens, all you will have to do on a chemical is get the material safety data sheet and look on the toxicology section. There are 10 tests of assorted acute and chronic types. And if the test has not been done, the only acceptable answer in the blank is no data available. So you should be able to simply glance down those sheets and know what's been done and what's not been done on that chemical.
Thank you for your call. We have some other comments coming in. Jerry from New Jersey wants to know about the use of fracking fluid in natural gas drilling.
Oh.
Would that be covered here?
No, unfortunately. But that is horrendous. I mean, the idea of breaking up rock with chemicals in water deep down under the ground where our water comes from and leaving those chemicals, I mean, it's just nuts. And I hear, oh, well, it's only a few percent. 1% is 10,000 parts per million. And things in your drinking water are regulated in parts per billion very often. You don't want 1%, 2%, 5% of chemicals being forced into the water and this in the rock underground. This is just such a bad, bad idea to do.
Let's take another call. Jeff from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air. Jeff?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Jeff. Thanks. I just wanted to ask your guest two questions. One, if the proposed legislation deals with chemicals that are, as far as testing chemicals, not singularly, but in conjunction with each other as far as reactions in the body, if there's anything, any proposed legislation like that. And then I'll ask my second question hopefully later.
Yeah.
Why don't you ask both of them now?
Okay. And the second one is if the Senate proposal is perhaps there's a loophole or could be used as a loophole where the onus for testing is not only on the company and the manufacturer, but also on the EPA to verify that testing, which I believe your guest spoke of earlier as the difference between the House bill and the Senate bill, and whether that could be a loophole for a manufacturer to get out of damages being sought in the future by putting the onus on the EPA and saying perhaps the EPA didn't have, whether they didn't have the time or the resources to do particular testing.
Or as we have seen in any number of cases where people have said, well, the government said it was okay,
It must be
okay, and that's why we continued producing arsenic and putting it into baby food. I made that one up, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the tests are all listed. So they have to be, and they have to be done at certified labs. You can't just do them in-house so that there's a fudge factor there. So the tests are pretty well set up so that all EPA has to do then is look at that test data and make up their decision on whether or not the burden of proof has been met.
What about his first question?
As for mixtures, yes, that's a complicated one because right now they're looking chemicals one at a time. They do talk about mixtures in the bill, but there really is no way of addressing right now synergisms or additive effects between chemicals on a basis that would go. If we're not testing chemicals one at a time, we're sure as hell not testing them two and five at a time. So it's first things first, I think, is the way we're going to have to look at that.
Do we know where our local representatives stand on these issues?
That's going to be interesting to see because we don't at this point.
A New York senator come out one way or another on the Lautenberg bill?
Nadler has said something, so I think Nadler's on board, but I don't really know about the others.
Well, I was wondering about the likelihood of this legislation even being passed, considering the fact that the Senate killed the environmental bill, and that was a bill that pretty much everybody thought was a good idea.
That's why I'm here, and that's why I'm anywhere anyone will listen to me. Because I think we really have to make it happen. And it's if enough people get behind this, and it's been three times now, and there is some impetus coming because they've got to do it because of reach, we just might be able to push it over the edge. Of course, you know which party I think ought to stay in power in order to do this, because I don't think that the Republicans will be in favor of this at all.
Although, you know, in the environmental bill, any number of Democrats voted against it as well.
That's true.
This becomes, if there's a chemical company in your congressional district or
That's
in
right.
your state, suddenly all those party considerations go out the window.
Yes.
You can read more about the Senate's Safe Chemicals Act, the House's Toxic Chemicals Act, and find Monona's website on our show page at WNYC.org. And if you want to read about the bills, you can also find the links to them on our show page, on our webpage here at WNYC.org. Venona Russell is the founder and president of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety. And thank you so much for coming by again today. By the way, we should point out that Frank Lautenberg is a local representative because he's a senator from New Jersey.
That's right.
Thank you again, Venona.
Oh, it was fun.